What we're going to get into today is, of course, the coat. Now, my goal as a whole is to cover it as a big picture. We get so focused on looking at Sukkot because we're living in it, we're looking at the few verses of it. We don't see the bigger picture. Or maybe even the big lesson. We see all the little lessons. Lessons like living together. There are little bumps. Right? There are little bumps about living together, loving one another. We're not perfect. It's a good lesson too. But love, true compassion and love, covers over a multitude of mistakes. With one another, with Him, and of course His love for us. So today I want to focus on that phrase, that Sukkot is a lesson about our journey home. Okay? I need you to hold on to that, that it's about our journey home. Okay? So with that, we're actually going to go into 2 Corinthians. So again, if you have your scriptures, you want to open up, we're going to go to 2 Corinthians chapter 5. And we're going to look at verses 1 through 3. See if this sounds familiar in regard to our sukkahs. For we know that if our earthly house, this tent, is destroyed, we have a building from Elohim, a house not made with hands, eternal in heaven. And in this we groan earnestly, desiring to be clothed with our habitation, which is from heaven. If indeed, having been clothed, we shall not be found naked. Now, key words in there, we see earthly house, tent, a building made from Elohim, eternal in the heavens, a habitation. But he's comparing, what's interesting here, is habitation, he is comparing to being what? Clothed. That the place we live in is like a covering for us. And having been clothed, we shall not be found naked. Verses 4 through 6. For we who are in this tent groan, being burdened, not because we want to be unclothed, but further clothed, that mortality may be swallowed up by life. Now he who has prepared us for this very thing is Elohim, who has given us the Spirit as a guarantee, and we are always confident, knowing that while we are at home in the body, we are absent from Yahweh. Now, 7 through 9. If we walk by faith and not by sight, we are confident, yes, well pleased, rather be absent from the body and present with Yahweh. Therefore, we make our aim, whether present or absent, to be what? Well pleasing to Him. Okay? That idea would be like pleasing to the eye, pleasing to his ears. All right? So, good or well pleasing is our goal. Now, key points here, and I brought over, I've talked about a few already. One, our body is an earthly tent or sukkah. It's going to expire. Just like the leaves that are out in our sukkah started off beautiful and green, flexible. Now they're brittle and brown, dried and dead. Right? If our sukkah is destroyed, we have a building made by Yahweh that is eternal in the heavens. Now notice he didn't say tent specifically, he said a building, and that's important. What's intriguing is he brings up this phrase, being clothed and being found naked. We want to be further clothed. And the goal here is we want a better covering than we have. Many of us long for the day when, you know what, the toil of this world, especially when you're in the midst of problems and tribulation, like, boy, I could just leave this behind and be in heaven forever. It would be so nice to be done. We desire to be well-pleasing or to be pleasing in His sight, to be good. Good in this idea or sense means complete. Now, look back at some of the words I've put in red. We have a building, clothed, naked, better covering, good. Now, where in the world will we have heard all of those in one section of Scripture? Because it seems like Paul is definitely pointing us somewhere. In the beginning, in Bereshit, that's exactly right. He seems to be pointing us back to Genesis. So if he's pointing us back to Genesis, we need to go to Genesis to get an idea of what he's trying to point out. Something deeper than just the words we're reading. So we'll start with Genesis 2, 8 through 9. So here we go. Yahweh Elohim planted a garden eastward in Eden. And there he put the man whom he had formed. And out of the ground, Elohim, Yahweh, made every tree grow that is what? Pleasant to the sight and good for food. The tree of life is also in the midst of the garden, and the tree of knowledge of good and evil. We already see this idea to grow that is pleasant to the sight. And Paul was making a point that we would be pleasant in his sight and good. Now, here's a point. I don't know if you know, if everybody knows these little details. I want to make sure we're on the same page. Man was not made in the garden. Scripture is very specific that man was made outside the garden. He was picked up and he was taken and put in the garden that Yahweh had already prepared for him. So already we have Yahweh going, you're here, but you know what? I have to lead you to a better place. Even from the very beginning, he has to take them to a better place. And what's intriguing is he's causing these trees to grow, right? These trees are going to be in the midst of the garden, and they're going to be good for what? For food, pleasant to the eyes. These trees are going to be fruit trees of which we can partake of, we can live on. But they also become our home, correct? They are a place we can live. 15 to 17. Then Yahweh Elohim took the man and put him in the garden of Eden to tend and keep it. And Yahweh Elohim commanded the man, saying, of every tree of the garden you may freely eat. But the tree of knowledge of good and evil you shall not eat. From the day that you eat it, you shall surely die. Okay? Again, the point that he was put in the garden to tend and keep it. Again, this is a point of, did man plant these things? No. Yahweh did. His goal was just to preserve them. Remember when we talk about the Shabbat, we're supposed to celebrate and to keep, right? Well, keep in that regard means to preserve or defend. In this regard, same thing with the garden. He wasn't actually meant to build it up. He was just to keep it the way it is. Preserve it. Verse 25. Now they were both naked, the man and his wife, and were not ashamed. They had no covering. They're living in amongst the trees, had no covering, but they felt no shame. And you know what? If you haven't done anything wrong, is there a need for shame? I mean, I'm sorry, for a covering? No, and there's no need to feel shame. So what happens? Man sins by eating of the fruit of the tree. Now, we're at Sukkot. What harvest are we in right now? It's the fruit harvest. the fruit of the tree would be coming in. We were gathering it all up, right? The fields, the fruit of the trees, bringing it in and be part of actually making the sukkah and celebrating. I don't think it's by accident here. Naked, clothed, fruit of the tree. Genesis 3, 7, and 8. Then the eyes of both of them were opened, and they knew that they were naked. And they sewed fig leaves together to make themselves a covering. Now, we're going to understand why the covering. But what's intriguing here is, do you realize that they went to those same trees, right? The garden. And they made their body a covering out of the trees. Now remember, our body is meant to be like a sukkah. So their bodies became a living-looking sukkah because their leaves were covering them. Now, I've joked in the past talking about when we try and create a covering, it's like using leaves, fig leaves, to sew them together. That first part of the day, those leaves are nice and flexible. You can move, strut, flex, no big deal. By the end of the day, that leaf is extremely dry and tender, and you're like, ah, there went that leaf, there went the entire garment, I got to start all over again. Man creates a covering from the boughs and branches of the leaves over himself. They heard the sound of Yahweh Elohim walking in the garden in the cool of the day, and Adam and his wife hid themselves from the presence of Yahweh Elohim among the trees of the garden. Where'd they hide? Among the trees. They were hiding there. And what's intriguing is they're hiding from the presence. This whole garden of trees, remember the whole point is the trees are going to come up and they're pleasing to the eye, was meant to be a place that Yahweh would meet with them. That was the whole goal. 17, 18. And to Adam he said, because you have heeded the voice of your wife. Now I'm going to stop there for a moment. Let's connect this back to the teaching. Remember what I said? Whoever's voice you listen to, they are your master or Elohim. Eve listened to Hasatan. Man listened to Eve. Heard her voice. Did what she asked him to do. Notice when you go back to the actual cursing of Eve, it did not say for her about the voice she listened to. That's only for Adam. And the voice of your wife, and you have eaten from the tree of which I commanded you, saying, you shall not eat from it, of it. Cursed is the ground for your sake. In toil you shall eat of it all the days of your life. Both thorns and thistles it shall bring forth in you, and you shall eat the herb of the field. So he's saying now, the reality is, what was going to be simple, all you got to do is go and tend the vine. Just cut off the extra pieces. No big deal, I've already taken care of it. No, now, to even bring forth a crop, you're going to have to go out to the ground. You're going to have to invest the sweat of your brow, your time in that land to even get something to grow. And I'm not promising it's going to be a great thing that grows. Now, I think Yahweh has this plan because you know what? That means if you're going to grow anything, who are you going to depend on? Him. He's making you more dependent on Him in this process. Genesis 3:19, in the sweat of your face you shall eat the bread till you return to the ground. For out of it you were taken, for dust you are, and dust you shall return. You know what? When they put those leaves on, they should have realized the covering they had was temporary and it wasn't going to last, just like the very body they had. It was going to return to the ground. It was going to wither. It was going to die. 21. Also for Adam and his wife, Elohim made tunics of skin and clothed them. Remember when in 2 Corinthians there was a desire to have a better covering? a more complete covering. Well, it happens here. They put together their covering, but that covering was going to be temporary. You know what? Yahweh goes, you know what? I have a better covering to give you. This covering is going to last. Better than you could ever imagine. Now hold on to that, because you know what? We're just starting. So this is the basic picture that I want you to see that Paul's trying to get to. Genesis 3, 22 and 23. Then Yahweh Elohim said, behold, the man has become like one of us to know good and evil. And now, lest he put out his hand and take also from the tree of life and eat and live forever. Therefore, Elohim sent him out of the garden to Eden to till the ground, out of the Garden of Eden, to the ground from which he was taken. Now, what's intriguing here is here's your cause, for those who are cause and effect people. If he takes out his hand and eats in the tree of life right now, he'll live forever, and he can live forever outside the presence of Yahweh. That's not good. Yahweh, not out of punishment for eating of the tree, but out of protection for the man and being able to live with him forever, sends him out of Eden. Now, I need you to really think about this for a moment. Yahweh created Eden as a home for us. It was a place of trees. It itself was like a sukkah. We were sent out of it into the world, and we had to excavate, we had to get in the ground, we had to do it, and it was going to be hard work. We were sent back. Look at this sukkah. It reminds me of the Garden of Eden. It's almost like we're creating our own little garden. That was our desire to go back to. And this is what that would look like on day one. And isn't it interesting that we start off the scripture, day one, where are we? We're right here, living in the garden, all these pleasant fruits, the blessings, it's all taken care of. And remember, at this time, the harvest was done, so you were resting. That's day one. But you know what? When sin enters, our human bodies, they dry out. Notice there's nothing really. I mean, there's probably a little grass back there, but there's nothing living here. And the reality is, guess what? If you were to live around that tent long enough and walk around and walk around, even the grass is going to die. Right? This is what's become of us. This is what we were. But you know what? Yahweh has a plan to bring us back to where we started from. And he starts with one man. Because you see, and I'm going to get to this in a minute, this is where Abram, in his lifestyle and his theology, is living in Ur. I'm not saying specifically, I'm saying in a spiritual manner, this place of death is his theology. This is his inheritance that's being passed down to him. To that, Yahweh says, now 12:1, Yahweh said to Abram, get out of your country, from your family and from your father's house to a land that I will show you. Yahweh kicked everybody out of his promised place, his garden. And now he tells a man, I've sent you out, but now get out of there and come, and I'm going to lead you to a land that I have prepared for you. Don't you hear in that reality this idea of being brought home again? Remember that we were kicked out. Genesis 12, 7 and 8. And Yahweh appeared to Abram and said, to your descendants I will give this land. And there he built an altar to Yahweh who had appeared to him, and he moved from there to the mountain east of Bethel. Now, Bethel, not a very difficult word. Beth is house. El is God. So, first of all, he goes, follows, and the first place he goes to a mountain, and he comes to a place called the house of God. So notice he always says, get out of your house and come to mine. Come out of your shelter, out of where you live, and come live with me. Remember the whole part of the garden, we have to kick him out, because if he eats this, we will not be together forever. And he pitched his tent with Bethel on the east and Ai on the west and east, and there he built an altar to Yahweh and called on the name of Yahweh. Any other connections? Yes, there is. To do it, we have to go back to Leviticus 23:39, where we're actually talking about the commandments in regard to Sukkot. But I wanted to read this later instead of first thing, because you know what? You're going to see the connections to the garden. Also on the 15th day of the seventh month, when you have gathered the what? Fruit of the land. You've gone and gathered all the fruit. You shall keep the feast of Yahweh for 7 days. On the first day, there should be a Sabbath rest. And in the eighth day, there shall be a Sabbath rest. Verse 40. And you shall take for yourselves on the first day. Oh, look at this. We're supposed to pick up fruit of the beautiful trees, branches of the palm trees, the boughs of the leafy trees, the willows of the brook, and you shall rejoice before Yahweh for 7 days. Now, isn't it interesting? He has us specifically go out at this season and grab hold of all of these leaves and branches to rejoice before him. And of course, on that first day, all those leaves and branches are going to be beautiful and green, reminding us again of where we started this whole journey from. But as the 7 days go on, we're also reminded of where this journey is going here, without him. 23:41-43, you shall keep it as a feast to Yahweh for 7 days of the year. It shall be a statute forever in your generation. You shall celebrate it in the seventh month. You shall dwell in booths for 7 days. All who are native Israelites shall dwell in booths, that your generation may know that I made the children of Israel dwell in booths when I brought them out of the land of Egypt. I am Yahweh Elohim. Now listen, Yahweh commanded the booths because when they came out of Egypt, he had them live in booths. Now what's intriguing is that Yahweh brings them out of one place into another. That starts from Genesis. He made us here, brought us to the garden, right? We were kicked out of the garden. It'd be like being taken from Egypt, go to the promised land, and we sin, and Yahweh sends us back to Egypt again. But there's an interesting connection to the point of Egypt, and that's our next connection. Exodus 12:3. Remember, we're talking about shelters, where you dwell. Speak to all the congregation of Israel, saying, on the 10th of the month, every man shall take for himself a lamb according to the house of his father, a lamb for a household. So every family, every house that was living together, you had a specific goal to go out and grab a lamb. According to your house. 12:6-7. Now if you keep it on the 14th, then now you shall keep it on the 14th day of the same month. Then the whole assembly of the congregation shall kill it at twilight, and they should take some of the blood and put it on the doorposts and the lintel and the houses where they eat it. So where they're going to eat it, inside their little house, they're going to put it upon the doorway. That lamb's going to die as one of them living in the house. Remember, the lamb had to be brought in the house. Had to die. The doorway is covered in the blood. I'm going to connect in a minute, so don't, like, where how does this connect? Just let me get there. Exodus 12:37. And the children of Israel journeyed from Ramses to Succoth. That's about 600,000 men on foot besides children. At Succoth is where they actually grab hold of the materials and made their tents. Now we read this and we go, good, sounds great. But do you realize that they were just taken from a house of bondage and given a temporary dwelling place to live with Yahweh? He took them from bondage, a prison, and the first thing he did is led them to a place that they could build a new house. Do you see this picture where he's continuing saying, I'm going to lead you home, I'm building you, I'm having you build this place to be back with me? Exodus 19, 1 and 2. In the third month, the children of Israel had gone out from the land of Egypt. On the very same day, they came to the wilderness of Sinai, that they had departed for Rephidim. They come to the wilderness of Sinai, and they camped in the wilderness. So Israel camped there before the mountain. They're camping with all their sukkahs around the mountain. 19, 5 through 6. Now therefore, if you will indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant, then you shall be a special treasure to me above all people. For all the earth is mine, and you shall be to me a kingdom of priests, a holy nation. These are the words which you shall speak to the children of Israel. Now what's intriguing is in Jerusalem, they would all gather around the temple, right? And every 7 years, they'd have to read the what? Torah, for everybody to hear. It's almost like the Temple Mount became Sinai again. That they would hear the words. And they were all encamped around it. Encamped around the mountain. To become, and again, if you indeed obey my, what? My voice. Not the voice of anyone else, but my voice. If. 19:10-11. Then Yahweh said to Moses, go to the people and consecrate them today and tomorrow and let them what? Wash their covering. We're going to clean our coverings and let them be ready for the third day. For on the third day, Yahweh will come down on the Mount Sinai side of all people. He is coming down to speak with them, to give them the words. Remember, Yahweh would come down in the cool of the day and speak with Adam in this place that was prepared. Yahweh is now coming down among their tents. Those tents are made of materials, right, of trees. And Yahweh spoke all these words, saying, I am Yahweh Elohim who brought you out of the land of Egypt. Out of what? The house of bondage. You shall have no other Elohim before me. I brought you out of that house. A house that you actually put yourself in. But I'm giving you a new house. If that's not good enough, from the minute Moses gets up on top of the mountain, Yahweh is actually giving the designs for his tent. For what purpose? So that he could live in the midst, the very center of them all. What was the point of the garden? Don't eat of the tree. I got to send you out because you'll live forever outside of my presence. Yahweh's leading them. They're now building a tent for Yahweh to be among them. His own temporary shelter among us. Exodus 29, 39, 42 to 43. This would happen at the tabernacle. One lamb you shall offer in the morning, and the other lamb you shall offer at twilight. This shall be a continual burnt offering throughout your generations. Listen to this. Where is this going to happen? At the door of the tabernacle meeting before Yahweh. Where was the lamb to be killed when they were in Egypt? It was killed at the door frame and put upon the door frame. And remember that when they went to sleep that night, they were still slaves. When they walked, and every other day that they walked out that door, they walked out to slavery and they were under Pharaoh. That next morning, when they walked out that door, it was not to slavery anymore. It was towards His presence, towards His teachings, towards His words, towards living with Him. Where I will meet with you to speak with you. Doesn't that sound like the garden? And there I will meet with the children of Israel, and the tabernacle shall be sanctified by my glory. Deuteronomy 6:9. The blood of the lamb had to be where? On the door frames. The lamb that's the burnt offering every evening and morning had to be slaughtered where? At the entrance to the tabernacle where Yahweh lived. You shall write my words, them on the doorposts of your house and upon your gates. Now hold on, because you know what? The actual chapter goes further. Here's 6:10. So it shall be when Yahweh Elohim brings you into the land of which He swore to your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to give you a large and beautiful cities, which what? You did not build. Houses full of all good things, which you did not fill. Hewn out wells, which you did not dig. Vineyards and olive trees, of which you did not plant. Doesn't that sound like Eden? Did man have to go and plant Eden? No, Yahweh already set up Eden. He brought him to it. Yahweh is now bringing back these children of Abraham into a promised land. Remember, they were kicked out of a land, a place. He's now bringing them back to a place. And remember in 2 Corinthians, he makes a point that a tabernacle that's not built by human hands, but in the heavenlies. If that's not good enough, they do get into the promised land. And Yahweh so wants to show them that He wants to live with them, He allows a temple to be built on the mountain. Everybody else living around. Permanent place among His people in Jerusalem. Prayers are said that Yahweh's eyes are always on Jerusalem the entire year. But this is just the foreshadowing. We're still not there. John 14, 2 through 3. Remember that the lamb that was going to be offered, the household was by the Father, right? A lamb for your father's house. In my father's house, there are many places. Sometimes it says mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you. I go to prepare a place for you. Now this is important. Do you realize that Yahweh sent His word in Genesis 1 to create the entire we live in as a place for us to live? Now it says, Yeshua says He's going back into the heavens. If the word itself creates places for our soul, us to live, right? That means that Yahweh is using His word to build spiritual places in the heavens for us. Just like He spoke into the void and created the earth, He's speaking into the spiritual sense of the heavens and building a place. A heavenly place. I go forth to make a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you to myself, that where I am, you would also be. Remember this whole point game back. Listen to my commands. What are written on the doorposts? The commands. Those commands are also a reminder what was to be put on that door frame? the blood of that innocent lamb that was part of our house. So that lamb is equated to his word, his commandments. Coming to the end, Revelation 21, 2 through 3. Then I, John, saw the holy city, a new Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from Elohim. Now, if a new Jerusalem is coming down from the heavenlies, that means it's been built. It's ready to come down. Built by heavenly hands, not by human ones. Now, this is probably more of a spiritual understanding than we really grasp right now. But understand, the point here is an actual spiritual place that is now coming out of the heavens for us to live with Him. Prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. And I heard a loud voice from heaven saying, behold, what? The tabernacle of Elohim is with men. And He will what? Dwell with them. And they shall be His people. Elohim Himself will be with them and be their Elohim. The whole goal of this new Jerusalem falling is to be with us and dwell with us. 22, 1 through 2. And He showed me a pure river of water of life, clear as crystal, proceeding from the throne of Elohim and of the Lamb. And the middle of the street on either side of the river was the tree of life, which bore 12 fruits, each tree yielding its fruit every month. The leaves of the tree were for the healing of the nations. Where are we brought back to? Isn't this a place where the tree of life is? Not only the branches, but the leaves now are actually going to be used as a part of a healing. The fruit and the leaves. They're all pleasant to the eye. Good for food. Revelation 22:14. Blessed are those who do what? Who do His commandments. For they may have the right to what? The tree of life. And may enter through the gates into the city. That means you don't get in. Do you realize we were kicked out of the garden and there was an actual guards with flaming swords put there so no one could actually cross? And Yahweh's saying, basically, if you listen to My voice, keep the commandments, you have the right to the tree of life. And I will lead you to that tree of life. I'm going to bring it to you and I will have you enter into the gates to the city that I'm bringing down. And you will have a place with Me. The picture, the lesson of Sukkot, is really a lesson of the bigger picture of what Yahweh's doing. My goal today was not to look at every little piece of everything, was to say, let's take, like, and get in a little bit of a helicopter and take a little bit of a ride up in the air to look at these scriptures from the distance to see the majestic picture that Yahweh's painted. Let's quickly summarize. Yahweh made man. He had him and took him and put him in a garden that He had specially made, beautiful, trees pleasant to the eye, good for food. Man listened to another voice and thought this other tree was actually pleasant to the eye and good for food, of which Yahweh said not to. They sinned and fell. Adam was punished. You listened to her voice. You didn't seek Mine. And you know what? Ladies, for people that want to say it's a woman issue, he could have listened to the serpent. It didn't matter. Any other voice, he would be punished. A better covering was given. That better covering was not leaves anymore. It was skin. I didn't even compare to John where it says, and His word was written on flesh to walk and dwell among us. Man is kicked out of the garden. He's got to struggle with all the sin every single day. But from that, Yahweh goes, you know what? Get out of your family's house. Get out of your father's house. Get out of your country and come and follow me. Be my people. And I will lead you to a promised land. They follow. Part of the process, guess what? They fall again and they fall into prison. Yahweh frees them from that prison. And you know what? The whole reason of Sukkot, remember, was connected for us to remember that when we were brought out of Egypt, the first thing he had us do was stop and build sukkahs. When we were living in our sukkahs this week or being around them, it was a reality that it was like we were being set free again. Why in the world are we rejoicing? Because we were saved. We're brought to the mountain, made covenant. He builds a tabernacle among us, a tent among us to live. He leads us into the promised land, even though we didn't deserve it. What's the scripture say? Not by your righteousness am I leading you in the land, but because of their sin. He builds a permanent temple, of which, you know, we sin and it gets destroyed. But you know what? All that doesn't matter. In the end, Yeshua says, I go forth to what? Make a place for you. A place for our soul. To live among him. So if we listen to his voice, when this great day comes, and I don't know what it's going to look like, because it says the moon and the sun are done, which means there's no more 7 days and no more time and no more calendar. Talks about a new Jerusalem coming down. A new Jerusalem of which if you hear his voice and you listen to it, you have the right to the tree of life. You're allowed to come back in and enjoy it. You know what's, I didn't even put it up there. When this Jerusalem comes down, there's no set building that's a temple. Revelation says the temple is Yahweh and his Lamb. You want to talk about presence? To come into his presence, he himself is a temple, a sanctuary for us. So as we come through this season and we get a chance to go out and look at the sukkah and all the, well, the only hard part in the reality of looking at our sukkah is it's twofold. Look at the roof and you're going to see how brown it is. Look at the walls and guess what? We have plastic. So maybe that's a good point because it's showing our bodies being preserved. But the point of it is going back to those pictures I had up earlier. One was this beautiful sukkah that was just full of fruit and the green and then that sukkah that was brown. You know what? Every time and through Scripture, Yahweh takes us from where we are and leads us to the place he wants us to go. And everything in between is the journey, and those are all the lessons. And we're on that journey. 8 days come, we're not done yet. He's got more of a journey. So you know what? We're being sent out again. But not to completely do the fields. Those fields we're going to need to tend now will be his other children. They'll be their hearts that we will have to go in using our tools to cultivate his words in, right? By the sweat of our brow for his glory. Baruch Hashem. Again, if you know the words, go ahead and say them with me as we go. Yevarech Yahweh Vayishmerecha. Ki Yahweh Temendega Tebetecha. May Yahweh bless you and keep you. Yar Yahweh Penevedecha Vuhunecha. Ki Yahweh Agas Rostro Spenaser Sobriti Ite Ortoge Subundan. May Yahweh make his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. Yisi Yahweh panavelecha v'yasem lecha shalom. Ki Yahweh muestre su rostro sobriti ite concede su paz. When Yahweh's face turns towards you, may he give you peace. Shalom and shalom. Hag Sameach.